A large Australian study of young people aged between 12 and 30 with mental health issues has found that about 1 in 5 had signs of metabolic problems, which could partly explain the life expectancy gap of around 15 years in people with severe and persistent mental health issues. The lead author was Associate Professor Liz Scott, a psychiatrist from the University of Notre Dame. Welcome to the Health Report.
Thank you.
Now, tell me more about what we knew about this premature death gap with people with severe and persistent mental illness before the study was done.
So we've known for a long time that metabolic risk increases in people with mental health disorders and that a lot of their physical health outcomes are very poor.
And by metabolic, you mean what?
Metabolic means changes in glucose metabolism, changes in lipid metabolism that really predispose you, changes in insulin resistance essentially, that predispose you to the development of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and probably in the longer term also issues like dementia. So a lot of the increased risk, however, is explained by this kind of premature cardiovascular disease. And we know that that's true for patients with psychosis. So we've known that for a long time, and there's been a lot of screening and assessment and treatment interventions. But a lot of those people have very established metabolic syndromes by the time they come into care.
But isn't that the drugs they're on?
So certainly lifestyle factors are important. Weight increases are extremely important. So as weight, what we call BMI, so that height-weight ratio increases, certainly your metabolic risk increases. Medications absolutely contribute to that. Some of them are better than others, but that's not the whole story. What we found in a lot of our youth work is that people present with signs of insulin resistance before their weight has changed, and also in some cases before they've been started on any medications, and particularly those medications that we know are risky in terms of weight.
Because once upon a time it was thought that suicide was the reason for the gap, and that's not thought anymore.
No. So clearly cardiovascular disease is a major issue, and that explains not only for psychosis but also for more common mental health disorders, and that's really important. For depressive disorders, we've known for a long time that depression is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and also that patients with depression are likely to die 15 years earlier than the general population from premature. Most of that's explained by premature cardiovascular disease.
And smoking is not the reason, because there are high smoking prevalence rates amongst groups with severe and persistent mental illness.
That's absolutely true. But if you take smoking out of the equation, the association still is true.
What did you do in this study?
So we've been really looking at what some of the metabolic, what some of the risk factors are in young people, and trying to understand how to provide better risk assessment earlier. So we know that the disorders that we treat, like depression, psychosis, the complex mood disorders, are really systemic disorders. They're not just disorders of mood. They're really disorders.
And they mostly start in adolescence.
And they, importantly, so not only are they common, 1 in 5 people will have a depressive disorder at some time, but 75% of them will start before the age of 25. A lot of those will start in adolescence. So what we've been really interested in is looking at what are the ways, how do we look at the risk factors in these young populations, because they're going to carry them with them for a long time. How do we take that into account in terms of treatment particularly? So borrowing from the psychosis protocols, they look at things like BMI, you know, height and weight. They look at blood glucose, and they look at lipids. But that
has so it's not, like cholesterol.
That's right. But that's, we know that that's actually not helpful. What we're really looking for.
Why is it not helpful?
Well, because those are associated with much more established disorders.
So they, it's down the path a bit.
It's down the path. So we've assumed that in psychosis, that's because people gain weight, they develop insulin resistance, and that predisposes them to diabetes and heart disease. And there's a long lag time before you present with symptoms to actually that kind of process of weight gain. What we found in our pre-existing studies was that actually when you take young people presenting to youth services with a mix of disorders, depression, anxiety, some with psychosis, their weight, their BMIs, and their fasting blood glucose is no different to the general population. And we know that some of those young people are at risk. So clearly just simply measuring BMI and fasting blood glucose was not...
It's not going to give you the information.
It's not going to give the information. And BMI was actually, so as your BMI went up, young people's fasting blood glucose did not go up. So those measures are not a good risk measure.
So you looked at another measure which, if you like, is up the pathway, uphill, if you like, from this insulin resistance. And we should just explain insulin resistance. Insulin is the hormone that reduces your blood sugar. And if you get insulin resistance, then it's less efficient at reducing your blood sugar. Your blood sugar levels go up and you're more at risk of diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
Yep, That's absolutely correct.
So what was this test that you did which measured this upstream risk?
So we've borrowed that from diabetes. So in diabetes, exactly the same. They're looking for really better ways of assessing risk earlier on in the course of illness so that you can put in place better early intervention and prevention. So the measure that we looked at is called the HOMA. So it's the homeostatic model assessment of insulin resistance, or the okay. HOMA. Right. And the modified version is the HOMA-2IR. But it really
So
looks,
my eyes are uncrossing now.
That's right. So really essentially what it says is, what's your level of insulin compared to your level of glucose? So if your level of glucose is high but your level of insulin is low, then we assume that you're managing. But actually, if your level of insulin keeps going up, we assume that you've lost some of the insulin sensitivity. Your pancreas is having to pump out more and more insulin to keep your blood sugar low. But what it means in testing is, if you're simply testing blood sugar, you don't see any changes in blood sugar until you're quite a long way down the track.
What did you find?
So when we looked at quite a large cohort of young people, over 750 who are coming to youth mental health clinics with a mix of disorders, we found that if you apply the HOMA 2 index, we found that at 10% of them were in the insulin resistant range, and another 12% were in that borderline elevated insulin resistant range.
And was there anything other than their mental health issue which predicted their resistance?
So weight. So obviously your BMI. So the higher your BMI, the more likely you were to have insulin resistance.
So that didn't disappear as a risk factor?
No. So clearly that's a major modifiable risk factor. The younger you were was also because insulin rates levels are higher in young people. But if you took those aside, they only explained about weight, only explained about 14% of the variance. So there were other risk factors at play. So in our sample, we did look at diagnosis, we looked at exposure to medications, and neither of those two
were predictive. So it didn't matter whether you had a first episode psychosis or
Correct.
Depression or anxiety.
Yep.
It was there in all these groups.
That's right. And it wasn't predicted by the medication that you were on.
So something else is going on.
Yes.
What is it?
Yes. So, you know, we need better, you know, we need more research really to understand. But we think, particularly if you look at depression is a heterogeneous group of disorders. And in that sense, it's a systemic disorder that there are
Meaning
probably
it affects
other,
the whole body.
Yeah. So there, in some types of depression particularly, we think there are more immune inflammatory factors at play, particularly people who have more fatigue, changes in concentration or pain associated with depression. In some depressive disorders, there will be disrupted brain clock systems, circadian systems, so people have more changes in sleep and activity patterns, and we know that brain clock disturbances are associated with risk for diabetes.
So are we talking about parallel processes here in somebody with susceptibility, or that the depression and anxiety comes first and then that disrupts the metabolic side of things, or the metabolic thing causes the depression and the problem with insulin resistance?
So again, we need more work to tease these things out, but it certainly looks like there are shared genetic determinants of depression, anxiety, and metabolic disruption, immune metabolic disruption, and that may lead to common biological mechanisms in these disorders.
So it means that psychiatrists have got a stethoscope out, and actually, remember, they've got a medical degree.
They have absolutely got to get their, you know, physically, they've got to be physicians, and they've got to manage the physical health consequences of these disorders in addition to the mental health.
Liz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Liz Scott is Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Notre Dame and the University of Sydney's Brain and Mind Centre. And you're listening to RN's Health Report with me, Norman Swan.